ArtsQuest Steel Stacks is presenting The Body Keeps the Score, Dancing with Trauma and Recovery, a choreographer-composer collaboration on Thursday, February 8th at 7:30 p.m. in the Music Fest Cafe. Sarah Carlson, the artistic director of DanceLink, has teamed up with composer Vernon J. Mobley to explore the universal spectrum of trauma in a program inspired by Bessel van der Kolk's well-known book of the same name. The Body Keeps the Score. We use movement, music, and text to unpack the idea that trauma must be addressed on an individual body level first before greater communal change can follow. The impact of trauma affects the lives of so many of us, Carlson has said. It interrupts our ability to be present, to function, and most tragically, to connect authentically with others. Most of us aren't even aware of how this traumatic residue is affecting our lives. This is WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and you are tuned in to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. I remain Kate Scuffle, your host, and this evening I'm talking with choreographer Sarah Carlson and composer Vernon Mobley about their latest collaboration, The Body Keeps the Score, Dancing with Trauma and Recovery. So welcome, Sarah and Vernon.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. It's interesting. We were talking a little bit before we sat down to record this about a video I'd seen, a trailer online for the piece. And Vernon, you and I were talking about when you have a piece like this that's inspired by a book, a written piece, a text, and then there's the leap to making something with music and dance and whatever. I don't think until I really saw the trailer that I thought, oh, I get it. It's about incarnate and physicality and when and all of that, you know, everything in the body. Could you talk a little bit first about either you, Sarah, or Vernon, the book itself and the inspiration for the piece? What about it spoke to you and kind of gave birth to this idea?
Sure. This project was born on the heels of another collaboration that Vern and I worked on called What Lies Within, Dancing with Race and Identity. And after that project, a colleague of mine introduced me to The Body Keeps the Score in direct connection to racism and what's going on there. But the book certainly doesn't stay there. It goes much, much further in individual stories and veteran stories and just, you know, everyday lives of everyone from a variety of backgrounds. And as I was reading it, I, you know, even though I didn't necessarily think of myself as having experienced great trauma in my life, I felt like I could relate to a lot of the coping mechanisms that van der Kolk describes. And I came to understand trauma as living on a spectrum and that we all have experienced traumatic moments in our lives that we are processing through our body. And the main point of the book is that, or one of them is that trauma lives in our bodies. And it is through the bodies that we need to heal. And I thought, what better choice of art to explore this notion than dance, which uses the body as its main medium. But then, you know, I thought about Vern. Vern and I have worked together on a number of projects. And at the time, he was my accompanist for classes that I was teaching at DeSales University. So we were working regularly together. And the piece itself came together in segments, some of which I set to his music originally, some of which was set to different music. And then he rescored them. Okay. And then we set a bunch of other sections that we talked about what they would be.
I think it'd be interesting for our listeners to imagine, how as a choreographer, if you're dealing with movement, the dance, the body, and that you burn with the music, what's it like to score movement, first of all, or dance, obviously, but again, working from a third piece of material that really wasn't either. Did you find that the movement came first more often, or the music? I mean, what was the process like for the two of you?
So working with Sarah, this process has come many different ways. Sometimes I have the choreography in front of me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have the idea of what the choreography is going to be, and that's all I have to go with. So what I rely on, my ability to translate words and translate movement into music, not just basic music, but kind of take what I see and what I hear and interpret it myself and then write music based on what I feel. How does it actually make me feel? Fortunately, I've been successful in being able to create music that coincides with the movement that Sarah has created and other people I've worked with. And it's become a very good match.
This isn't the first dance work that you've worked with. I mean, or you've worked with other pieces other than with Sarah.
Yes. I've worked with Sarah on small pieces, right. On a couple large shows.
Yeah.
I've also worked with other performers, other choreographers and instructors at DeSales University to do pieces for them as well as some outside other choreographers as well.
Right. And for you, Sarah, as a choreographer then, did you find that Vern's music often, that would flow back? Would that then shift or affect the choreography that you were creating with the dancers?
Yes, for sure. There are moments where there's a sound effect that literally ripples through bodies. But I think Vern's music really provides a soundscape in which the movement lives. Okay. Before you asked about how does one move from this text to movement, and we'd actually start with several quotes from the book itself. I'm a word person. I like words and their ability to capture certain ideas. But, and the book itself is filled with lots of science and lots of really intriguing, poignant, deep thoughts. It's also filled with lots of stories and testimonials. Not really testimonials, but Van de Kolk's testimonials of working with his patients and descriptions of what they've gone through. So for my dancers, I had them each delve into their own personal experience and write their own stories. And it was from their stories that they developed what I call trauma solos, which make their appearance in a repeating section called Run, Walk, Stop. And those are very personal to them. They incorporate their own life experience, major themes that run through them, and movement motifs that they've built to express them.
It's interesting. I have not read the book, although after doing some digging around for the interview today, I'm definitely going to. I'm fascinated. But it seems to me that there's a sense in the book that there's a kind of conversation that goes on through, too, about solo trauma versus community trauma, or healing on the personal level to heal on the collective level. Did that start to bounce around and be reflected within the work as you guys worked as a group as well?
For sure, yes. The cast of the piece is 10 dancers, which is kind of a big group for my work. And the piece starts with all 10 on stage, and they are on stage, they are experiencing something, but it's an individual experience collectively rather than a group bonded experience. And that's sort of the big shift that happens throughout the show, that it's the trauma that prevents connection and that the show unpacks a variety of different styles, coping mechanisms on our way through and protecting ourselves through trauma. But then there's a shift, and we go into a moment of healing, several sections of sort of awakening out of the cloud of trauma. And the piece ends with connection, with our ability to find that, find one another again. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for me, that's really what represents healing.
Right.
So there's an arc to this that, as well as the science or the information of a book or a text, is also a journey.
Absolutely.
Through the piece.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a total journey. The book is a journey, and the dance work is a journey as well. There have been many comments with people who have seen the show that what they saw was their lives, their entire life journey. Several people have made comments, "You've never met me before, I've never met you before, and yet somehow you've managed to put my entire life up on stage." And it has encouraged them to continue their healing process, and for others to begin their healing process, that they realize they're not by themselves, by watching the work and being in a facility with people who also have experienced trauma. In some cases, it has given them the courage to start to seek help for their personal trauma. Oftentimes we think that we're by ourselves, and that's just, it's just not the case. We're not by ourselves. So I'm glad that there's the healing portion of the show that allows people to start the process or continue the process of their own personal healing.
It's fascinating. So the audience also goes on a journey with you through the evening.
Absolutely.
It comes out differently the other side.
Absolutely.
Yeah. it's interesting when we talk about trauma, too. I would have to wonder if, you know, for the person watching, a lot of us might think, well, trauma is a vet, a soldier. Trauma is someone that's been through something absolutely catastrophic. But trauma's got all kinds of shades of gray and levels, doesn't it, in our daily lives?
Well, we're all
in our communal lives, too.
We're all personal people, and so the definition of trauma varies from person to person. And so regardless as to where you fall on the trauma spectrum, can I say? Regardless as to where you fall on the spectrum, the work is done in such a manner to speak to you regardless as to where you fall.
It's interesting. And then the idea of the collective healing is fascinating. It goes back to there would be spiritual beliefs that, you know, you start with yourself, you fix yourself, the whole idea that you fix yourself to fix the world. This is also feels like it's about healing oneself to be able to heal the community, if that's right.
Well, it's oftentimes difficult to help someone else when you are in such a deficient state yourself. If someone else is sick, it's hard to help them if you're sick yourself. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to get better or well before you can efficiently help someone else get better. So it, again, provides an opportunity for those who watch the show to either continue their healing process or to begin their healing process.
Or to feel they're allowed a healing process.
Well, many times people don't feel that they're actually allowed, that the hurt and the trauma, the state that they're in, that is their lot in life. And so they're supposed to take what life has given them. They're supposed to stay there and use whatever coping mechanism that they have subscribed to get them from day to day, week to week, month to month, through the rest of their lives. And that's not necessarily that's not the case. You don't have to stay where you are. You're not by yourself. There is help available. There are communities available. There are professional services that they're available. But again, you're not by yourself. And sometimes to take the step that you need, you might need to hold someone's hand who's been through something similar. Maybe not the exact thing, but something similar, and hold hands and take a step, one step at a time. Even one step is progress, and sometimes you need to begin the process of the progress.
And I think the process can be messy as well. Let's be frank here. This is not easy. None of what we're talking about is easy. I've been critiqued because within the arc of the show, there's many more sections dealing with the trauma than the recovery from the trauma. But I do think that there's something real to that because, you know, we live in a society where it's not necessarily okay or invited to claim your trauma or to reveal that everything is not okay, right? And that social dynamic shows up within the piece as well. It's not helpful always. We wear masks because of it, right? Mm-hmm. We hide ourselves. And so it's a circular dance. It's a cyclical dance. And that cycle is definitely played with a lot in the course of the choreography. And it's like, how do we get free of that cycle? That's the question. And sometimes there are no easy answers. And that's one of the reasons why I choreograph and choose movement as a way to move through it, because these are the questions that have no easy answers. And so how do we live with them? How do we move our way to new understanding? And sometimes my mind can't think there, but my body can get there.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon on WDIY 88.1. I'm your host, Kate Scuffle, and I'm talking with choreographer Sarah Carlson and composer Verna Mobley about their latest collaboration, The Body Keeps the Score, Dancing with Trauma and Recovery, coming to the Music Fest Cafe at Steel Stacks on Thursday, February 8th. We'll be right back after this short break.
The World Blend is an international mix of music traditions, exploring new music and familiar favorites from indie rock, reggae, zydeco, afro pop, and roots music from every continent. An adventurous soundtrack for your Saturday afternoon, whether busy or relaxed. Join us Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m. for The World Blend, right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon here on WDIY 88.1, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Kate Scuffle, and tonight I'm talking with DanceLink Artistic Director and Choreographer Sarah Carlson and composer and musician Verna Mobley about their latest collaboration, The Body Keeps the Score, Dancing with Trauma and Recovery, being presented by ArtsQuest Steel Stacks at the Music Fest Cafe on Thursday, February 8th. Before we went to a break, we were talking a little bit about the audience, how they're impacted or how they move through the piece with you. There's a post-performance talkback as part of the evening. What has that been like in the past? What is that experience for the audience?
I find it's a really important aspect of the evening because the show is intense. It's intense to watch. And you might wonder, why? Why would you want to come out to see an evening of dance about drama? And that's a good question, but it is riveting. I think again and again, we've heard from our audiences just how impactful it has been on them. At the end is a chance to start to talk through some of what has been the most resonant for the viewers. This time around, we are having a panel of counselors and trauma specialists who deal with communities and populations who have undergone a lot of trauma. So representatives from United Way, Turning Point, as well as other counselors in the field who will help unpack exactly what they have seen go on stage and present their resources for the audience to turn to afterwards. But sometimes it's just a matter of being able to share what a particular moment in the show brought up for you and knowing, again, that you're not alone.
Yeah, that's usually how we start. So what piece resonated with you? And that kind of gets the ball rolling. There have been a range of emotions. There have people who have stood and said what they felt with tears in their eyes. They haven't necessarily shared their personal experiences, but yet they felt safe because the performance talkback is a safe space for everyone to share whatever it is that may be on their mind. People have shared their emotions, what resonated with them, why it has. Again, some people have gained the courage to keep going. Others have stood and said they've gained the courage to start their process. And so it's a very emotionally packed show, and the talk back is usually just as emotionally packed.
I would imagine. You had mentioned while we were on the break that, in fact, you have some life stories, some intersections with the piece that...
So quickly, because I can make a story take a very long time, as all my friends know. We started the process of writing the music for the play in the summer, and there were several pieces that I started writing. I had not completed them. And then I was diagnosed with intestinal cancer in the midst of all of this. And so it stopped the writing process. Now, during this entire process, I had read the book twice. I had done all of the things that Sarah asked the dancers to do to prepare, kind of tapping into their own trauma. At that point, I had not had any major trauma, what I would consider major trauma. And so I am learning of the trauma of the dancers so that as I'm composing music for solo pieces or for group pieces, I can kind of pull on their emotions. But my emotions were just simply translations. Well, that all changed. There was the diagnosis. There were the complications I had in the hospital. There was the treatment afterwards. There was the recovery. And then in the midst of the recovery, oh, by the way, you have to write music for a show. All of the music that I had started writing, I actually had to scrap because I wasn't the same person. My definition of trauma was different. My understanding of so many things were different. My experiences with the trauma, with the recovery, how my body kept the score, literally kept the score. That all was different. And so when I began the writing process the second time, it was done from a completely different perspective. And I was able to understand what the dancers were saying. And when I saw movements that Sarah had put in or in the improvisational sections that the dancers, you could tell they were dancing with their emotions. I was able to understand their emotions and try and create music that truly sympathized. I was no longer on the outside looking in on their trauma and trying to translate it. I was on the floor with them, holding their hand, sharing in their trauma through my own interpretation to try and create a score that would do the topic of the book justice, yeah. Sarah's choreography justice, and be able to support the dancers and not just the dancing and the movement, but actually be able to support the dancers through their trauma, because for those solo pieces where the dancers are tapping into their own trauma, they're reliving that trauma themselves to help them to dance those improvisational pieces. And so the music wasn't just something to just support the show. It was a coping mechanism for me, coping mechanism for the dancers.
Or a therapy.
Yeah. It was. It's very interesting. So there's the show and there's the soundtrack for the show. It's 53 minutes long. I actually put my own soundtrack in as I was going through some things, and I listened to my own soundtrack. I didn't do it intentionally. I was kind of going through some music and I said, oh, hey, here's the, you know, here's the soundtrack for Body Keeps the Score. And being a musician, I'm always on the road. And I had to travel about an hour. And for 53 minutes of that hour, I listened to the soundtrack. My total everything was different by the time I had gotten to the end of this. Not to mention, I think the last time we did the show, I'm usually buzzing around and doing things and checking and make sure things are okay. I got to sit and watch the show because the sound was right. Everything was perfect. And I actually got to watch the show, and it affected me, not just the music, because I heard the music all the time, but the dancing. It was a complete and total different experience for me, you know, having those elements together.
It's interesting because as a theater artist myself, I'm used to words being the way basically I would be communicating with an audience, you know, essentially that's the primary way. It really struck me, the little bit of the piece that I've seen, I don't think I could have begun to imagine how much the music and the physicality of the movement, dance slash movement, I didn't miss language. It was so interesting. I don't know that I expected that. Although you use a bit of language from the book occasionally,
right.
And as you move through the piece. So it's interesting to hear you talk about the soundtrack on its own, too, the effect of that, and then the combination of the soundtrack and the movement. It becomes a visual and an audio thing. But movement, too, obviously the title of the book, The Body Keeps the Score, that I kind of thought, well, that kind of makes sense because the physicality is key here. And so coping mechanisms often are living in the body. Would that be correct? Is that something that makes it easier to translate the story through the body because of that?
Yeah, I mean, we all read body language. You know, bones know how to read bones, and that's why dance is powerful. One of the things that we look at in the piece are breath patterns. And so breath being constricted or short, or, you know, being short of breath. So there's a whole section on breath patterns. There's another section on numbing out. So that would be another coping mechanism. And, you know, one might think of that primarily as being mentally numbed out. But it's also, we can portray it physically well. And we do in one section. Some other dynamics, social dynamics that we play with are the energy between bodies, how bodies affect other bodies around them. Uh-huh. So when someone is not feeling well, and they have a darkness, a negativity to them, they have the potential to pull other people down or into their flow. Mm-hmm. This works for the good as well. You can literally, you know, be a great, sunny, positive person and bring people up. But, you know, that power of bodies to affect others around them is a powerful force that we explore.
Mm. And just for our listeners, just a reminder, because we could talk about this for ages and I'll forget to let them know how they can find out more. I would mention to our listeners, if anyone has not been to the Music Fest Cafe, I anticipate there's a gorgeous space to stage this in. It's really exciting.
We're very excited to have this performance of all of the places in Steelstax that it could be in Arts Quest. That we're excited that we're on the main stage. We're in the big room upstairs in the Music Fest Cafe. We're very excited. It should be that much more powerful.
Yeah, yeah. a website, or just that basically people can go to the Arts Quest page, and essentially the info's there.
Everything you need to know is there, as well as the tickets. Yep, the link to the tickets.
But the space is a beautiful space as well. I think I'm intrigued to see it staged there. How did that come about? You worked at the Ice House.
It premiered back in 2018 at the Ice House, and it has been reset. This is the fifth time we're resetting it, so it continues to be very resonant. And especially post COVID, we all have a lot of trauma to unpack.
Right.
But Vern was actually the reason why we ended up.
Sometimes when a piece kind of latches on to you, you just can't let it go because you feel that everyone needs to see the piece. And I was fortunate enough to have a few conversations with Patrick Brogan and with Cassie at Arts Quest. They said, we agree. Everyone should see this. And if they're going to see it, they should see it on the biggest stage possible at the Music Fest Cafe. And here we are.
Well, congratulations to you both, and thank you to you both. I'm just about out of time, but I just do have to say one of the things that I love about Art Salon is the chance to let our listeners know that art isn't just something, as it's not a distraction, it's not for the elite, it's an actual force in the community for healing and growth and learning, and I can't think of a better example. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you to you, our listeners. I've been your host, Kate Scuffle, here on WDIY 88.1 FM, the Lehigh Valley's public radio. And I look forward to visiting with you again soon, right here in the Valley Arts Salon. If you enjoyed this program, please go to WDIY.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.